Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines of the mainstream news. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, some are wondering if the fatal shooting of 14 people in San Bernardino, along with a chart in the Washington Post showing that the year so far has included more mass shootings than days, might be the push corporate media need to stop covering gun control as a some-say-others-differ culture war issue and move toward approaching it as an urgent public health concern. A similar shift seems called for on abortion, which corporate media treat as, first and foremost, a debate, as though it can't be the subject of straight reporting. But if media's takeaway from the violent murders of three people at a Colorado Springs Planned Parenthood clinic by a man reportedly ranting about baby parts is that both sides need to tone down their rhetoric, then women and women's reproductive rights will be taking a step backward. We'll discuss the broader context for the Colorado Springs killings and how to move forward on reproductive justice with Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check. That's coming up, but first, as usual, we'll take a look back at the week's press. On November 26th, the Pentagon ought to have given thanks to the Washington Post for a turkey of a piece. Reporting on Russian military operations in Syria, the Post's Karen DeYoung wrote, quote, "The United States has also claimed that Russia has caused numerous civilian casualties with unguided munitions, gravity bombs dropped from the sky," close quote. DeYoung cites the spokesman of the U.S.-led coalition, Colonel Steve Warren, saying, quote, "This is the reckless and irresponsible, imprecise and frankly uncaring approach to operations in Syria that the Russians have taken on," close quote. And she adds in her own voice, quote, "In a report issued late last week, the London-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said it had documented 403 civilians, including 166 women and children, killed in Russian airstrikes, more than the 381 fighters from both rebel and terrorist forces it said had been killed. The U.S. military has acknowledged two instances where airstrikes against the Islamic State resulted in civilian deaths," close quote. So here we have U.S. claims that Russian airstrikes are killing civilians, backed up by statistics from a presumably independent human rights group. Meanwhile, when the U.S. government claims to have killed almost no civilians in its air attacks, the Post just takes their word for it. The British Guardian was able to come up with some independent tallies. Quote, "Air Wars, a project by a team of independent journalists, is publishing details of 52 strikes with what it believes are credible reports of at least 459 non-combatant deaths, including those of more than 100 children," close quote. Well, that was back in August. More recent tallies by Air Wars have the U.S.-led coalition killing at least 680 civilians and possibly as many as 975. By reporting the civilians killed by the official enemy while concealing those killed by the U.S., DeYoung is basically doing volunteer PR work for the Pentagon. We hope they at least saved her some pie. Well, such blatant water carrying looks almost subtle next to some of the Washington Post's foreign policy offerings. For example, see if you can puzzle out how the Post feels and wants you to feel about the new president of Argentina, based solely on the lead from what is not an editorial but an article from November 23rd. Quote, "The stereotypical Latin American leader of the past generation has been a firebrand populist who could deliver hours-long impromptu speeches on television, painted the United States as the source of all evil, and had probably fought as a guerrilla in some steamy jungle. That type of leader, think Cuba's Fidel Castro, Venezuela's Hugo Chavez, or Argentina's Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, minus the guerrilla experience, is the opposite of Mauricio Macri, the understated engineer and Buenos Aires mayor who was elected president of Argentina on Sunday," close quote. If you still need more clues, the article goes on to state that Macri's appeal, quote, stems in part from his lack of a strong ideology, a sharp contrast to Fernandez's fierce nationalism. Macri, a scion of one of the country's richest families, headed the soccer team Boca Juniors and is serving his second term as mayor of Buenos Aires, where he is known for sprucing up the capital, bringing in art and music performances, and adding bus lanes. He's the anti-Cristina, said Diego Guelar, a foreign policy advisor to Macri. He's a doer. That would be exactly his ideology. Close quote. There may be critics of the man here labeled a calm, fact-favoring engineer, but don't expect to hear too much from them in The Washington Post. And finally, in a piece picked up everywhere from the Seattle Times to the Knoxville News Sentinel, the Associated Press called the November 13th ISIS attacks in Paris, quote, the deadliest violence to strike France since World War II, close quote. The Atlantic concurred with that description for the horrific attacks that killed 130 people, calling them, quote, the worst violence on French soil since World War II and the worst in Europe since 2004, when coordinated blasts on Madrid's commuter train system killed 191 people, close quote. It does no dishonor to those killed in Paris last month to acknowledge that at least 200 people were killed in that city on October 17, 1961. It was nearly 7 years into the war for Algeria's independence from French colonial rule, and some 30,000 Muslims demonstrated in central Paris against a curfew imposed solely on Muslims. They were met by a police force led by Prefect Maurice Papon, who would later be charged with crimes against humanity for his collaborationist role in the Vichy government. In a 1997 story for the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, reporter James Napoli cited contemporary reports of demonstrators clubbed, beaten, strangled, and pushed into the Seine, of dead Algerians piled like cordwood on the street. The French government covered up the massacre for years. Official claims were that two or perhaps five people had been killed. Only in 2012 was a plaque erected to acknowledge the numerous Algerians killed during the bloody suppression of a peaceful demonstration. Media needn't worry that people wouldn't care about the recent attacks without the superlatives. And though much can no doubt be attributed to a lack of historical knowledge and just laziness, media still missed a meaningful opportunity to shed light on a hidden history and connect the present with the past. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR. I'll give a little more information about FAIR later on in the program. It's a crime story, a culture war story, a debate about what gets called terrorism, and about presidential candidates' ability to rise or sink to an occasion. But for all the worthy stories being aired, the killing of three people at a Colorado Springs Planned Parenthood clinic by a man angry about baby parts hasn't quite become a story about women and our right to decide whether to have a child. With Colorado only the latest in a long, long history of attacks, how do we move the conversation off the dime of whether reproductive justice advocates have a right to be upset toward what must be done to secure an atmosphere in which women can actually exercise their full human and legal rights? Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief at RH Reality Check. She joins us now by phone from Maryland. Welcome back to Counterspin, Jody Jacobson.
Thank you for having me.
Well, of criteria by which journalism can be judged, I think anyone would say providing adequate context for events would be preeminent. So it would seem odd not to locate the November 27th murders by Robert Louis Deer within a context of months of serious contentions from serious people like Carly Fiorina, like Ted Cruz, that Planned Parenthood barters and sells the body parts of unborn children, as Cruz has said, or that is, as Mike Huckabee said, it's a kill-for-hire organization. I mean, it says something about media's approach to abortion that we have to argue that that's an appropriate context within which to understand these murders.
Absolutely. Look, we're in a period right now where we're sort of in what I call a battle of fundamentalism. Yesterday, we saw many people killed and wounded by a couple of people who we don't know their motivation or really where they were coming from or what they were doing. But we do know that they took violence into their own hands for what may well end up being a personal issue.
This is San Bernardino.
In San Bernardino. And last week, we saw a man go and attack a Planned Parenthood clinic, again, out of what he thought was his personal responsibility to attack healthcare providers. Where is all of this coming from? The Christian right in this country sees itself as preeminent and sees itself as creating the Christian law that it wants us all to abide by, which includes a very strict and regulated role for women, which absolutely does not include access to contraception, birth control, reproductive health care, or control over our own bodies, including abortion care. So you've got this atmosphere in which people like a deluded and violently aggressive person, as his past indicates, like Robert Deere, decides it's okay for him to take matters into his own hands. So I think there's a connection here. Whatever we're labeling these different things, there's a connection here between ideologies that are being spread and giving permission to people to take action based on their own grievances or perceptions and take matters into their own hands. And I'm very concerned about that because in the aftermath of the Planned Parenthood attacks last week, not only did the Christian right not take any responsibility, we saw several of the people in that community actually egg on perpetrators of violence, like Eric Erickson, who's the editor of Red State and is a Fox News contributor, literally said that he's surprised there aren't more people doing it. So I think we're in a really scary time because we're a country that is loaded for bear with guns and all sorts of other ammunition and firearms, and we are encouraging people to take matters into their own hands.
Well, there's a short-term and a longer-term historical context here. I mean, just in terms of sequence of events. In the short term, this clearly has some connection to the video by the so-called Center for Medical Progress that was released in July. There was actually a traceable effect, wasn't there, of the release of that video and threats to abortion providers.
Absolutely. For months on end, we've seen, again, members of the Christian right and the anti-choice community, which is increasingly one, using videos that were purposefully created for the purpose of defaming Planned Parenthood. These are heavily edited, deceptive videos that purport to show Planned Parenthood breaking the law when it comes to the donation of fetal tissue. Now, there has been really bad reporting on this because you've got this false equivalency reporting which says the videos came out and they blame Planned Parenthood for this. Planned Parenthood says it's not true. Well, let's be real here. There's been congressional committees and there's been at least 8, if not 10, state investigations, all of which have found absolutely no wrongdoing because there's no wrongdoing to be found. In fact, governors in several states undertook to take taxpayer money to, quote-unquote, investigate Planned Parenthood's fetal tissue research in their state, in states where Planned Parenthood doesn't do fetal tissue research donations. So, I mean, talk about the absurdity of using this as a political tool against a women's health care provider. It's just one in a long series of attacks on Planned Parenthood. And what's happened with these videos, they were purposefully both created and then edited to make it look like there was wrongdoing, but then they were purposefully leaked out over a period of time as a method of trying to create a longer arc for this story, generate disgust and hatred against Planned Parenthood, and also leading up to votes in the Senate and the House to defund Planned Parenthood. So you've got a real strategy here. We already know that at least two, if not more, of the folks on one of the House committees that oversees these things saw these videos well before they were released and didn't look into whether they were true or not. So they knew what was coming. We have FOIA'd requests for communications around this to find out who knew what when, because it says something that these congresspeople were shown these videos. We don't know if they saw the unedited versions or the edited versions. We don't know what was behind it. But, you know, here we have collusion between a group that has no credibility to begin with, likely obtained these videos in an illegal manner in the state of California, used false IDs, and then infiltrated clinics and meetings and secretly taped people and then heavily edited the videos to make it look like something was going wrong.
Well, you point to a real media phenomenon there, even outlets that themselves debunked the CMD video that stated flat out that it doesn't show what it purports to show, that people are actively disinforming. Even those outlets will now report matter-of-factly on mischaracterizations of the video, you know, because that's a thing that happened, someone said that, without acknowledging that doing so lends it some legitimacy, you know, by tacitly allowing something that is untrue to be presented as debatable.
Exactly.
Reporters are lending it an inappropriate legitimacy that's volatile, that you might even say is weaponized. You know, they make themselves, I think, part of the problem here.
Exactly, because what it does is it suggests there's an open question where no open question exists. You're not only suggesting there's an open question, you're taking the word of a heretofore unbeknownst organization on the board of which is a known right-wing abortion terror encourager. That would be Troy Newman, who's the head of Operation Rescue, and who has said that, you know, he's just A-OK with the execution, in his words, of abortion providers. And you are making them a credible voice on an issue that they have just demonstrated absolutely no credibility. So to me, it's the height of irresponsible journalism wrapped up in some sort of journalistic integrity flag, and it's not. It's not. There's no integrity in it.
I was going to ask you about Troy Newman. He's the board member of this Center for Medical Progress and president, as you note, of Operation Rescue. That ties this latest video in a way to the longer history that we know of clinic attacks. And we're not talking about, you know, I've seen some a brief look back items in papers, but we're not talking about a couple dozen incidents over the years.
We are talking about, in terms of the violence that's been perpetrated against providers, we are talking about not only a history of violence, but also what the FBI itself has noted is an increasing threat of violence and an increasing trend of violence, meaning that we're actually seeing increased violence aimed at providers. So you've got arsons, you've got shootings, you've got anthrax letters being sent, you've got intimidation and harassment, docking of providers has risen, you've got these flyers that are made up to look like wanted posters that give the private information of providers and clinic workers. You've got all of these kinds of practices of outright intimidation that, while of course they are in some ways protected by the First Amendment, because they are inciting violence, now we know clearly they're inciting violence, I think have to be looked at from the point of view of what the real intention here is. In California, for example, there's a law that enables providers of abortion services and reproductive health care to keep completely private all of their personal and other information. And it adds a measure, it's not a certainty of anything, but it adds a measure of safety for those folks. Whereas in other states, that not only does not exist, but in some states, they've tried to actually make the personal information of providers and clinic workers more available to those who would do them harm, which, again, I feel like is incitement to violence and intimidation. So I find it really troublesome that this is not a fringe group exercise. This is a collusion with legislative and other folks who are in power, who are policymakers, lawmakers, attorneys general, who who have it out for reproductive health providers and have done their best to lay the groundwork for anti-choice terrorism and anti-choice intimidation.
Well, the attacks, as we're saying, aren't new, and neither is some media's inappropriate search for balance. Ted Koppel introduced a 1993 episode of Nightline on clinic violence by comparing the number of legal abortions with the number of murdered doctors, calling that the latest casualty count from the battlefront between the pro-life and pro-choice movements. Among many other things you might say, that toting up of values completely erases women, of course, you know, and now we get, in the present day, this sort of both sides should tone down their rhetoric line. The New York Times says, quote, Planned Parenthood has fomented political passions on both the left and the right in Washington, close quote. It seems, again, for media, it's a two-side story. It's not a human rights story. It just isn't framed in that way.
Exactly. That is exactly right.
Well, Jessica Valenti, in writing for The Guardian, pointed to a problematic response from many reproductive rights supporters, which has been to say, oh, but abortions are only a small fraction of the services Planned Parenthood provides, you know, which is true enough. But as Valenti put it, the attacker wasn't there because he was angry about pap smears, you know.
Right.
I feel that we are at the point where weak defenses of abortion rights, as Katha Pollitt very roughly paraphrased puts it, we can have it as long as everyone feels terrible about it. You know,
right.
Those are virtually non-defenses at this point. How do we move into a positive, proactive position on this?
Well, that is a question that is very heavily and broadly debated in the pro-choice community right now, because there are many of us, myself included, who are not only unapologetic about abortion care, but are unapologetic about their own abortions and want and try to speak out both personally to open the space for other people to do so, but also to encourage women and others, the men that have supported them, the families that have supported them, to speak out about their abortions, because it is one of the most common procedures that is undertaken in the United States. And, you know, it is a human rights issue. It's also a public health issue. It's a public health issue. And we are so unused to talking about that. But in countries where access to legal abortion is not available, one of the leading causes of death will inevitably be complications of unsafe abortion. So when I say that, I mean, to be more specific, one of the leading causes of maternal mortality of women between the ages of 18 and 49. So this is a public health issue of tremendous proportion, and we can't ignore that aspect of it. It's both public health and human rights, and we talk about it as though we're only a fight of ideologies, but it's really on the, as far as I'm concerned, to be pro-choice is a medically required approach, a public health required approach to health care, because if you don't have access to abortion, women die in higher numbers. And we've already got a problem in this country with high rates of maternal mortality, far higher than many other countries on the same level of economic and social development. So, you know, the fact that we're debating things like access to contraception and abortion care just goes to show you how disrespected public health is as a key issue.
Well, finally, in the wake of the Colorado Springs attacks, we have had a lot of conversation about how these are meant to harass providers. These attacks are meant to harass providers. They're meant to threaten women. But the response from providers, it seems, is not getting the intended effect. Providers have come out and said, you know, we're going forward undaunted. Is that not true?
Some of the larger providers do rely to a greater extent on the services they provide and the reimbursements they get from Medicaid. And there's good reason that they are concerned about those, because there are people that are served by those services and they deserve to be and need to be served by those services. But when you are trying to deal with congressional representatives and others and you are trying to work around their concerns, you might downplay things like abortion care and what share of your services is abortion care. In the long run, as you noted earlier, that is a really bad strategy, because it seems to say, as you noted, there's something wrong with this, so we're not going to talk about it. Whereas now we're seeing more and more providers saying, I'm an abortion provider. I am proud of the work I do. I serve women. This is why I do this. I think we saw that beautifully done in an op-ed in the New York Times by Dr. Willie Parker, who is a provider of abortion care, who travels extensively every week to make sure that women in certain states can get access to abortion care, who's very dedicated to being open about the work that he does, which, let's face it, puts him at no small risk of some fanatical person potentially attacking him. But the bravery with which he's acting is something that has given a sense of renewed openness from other providers as well.
We've been speaking with Jody Jacobson of RH Reality Check. Find their work online at rhrealitycheck.org. Thank you so much, Jody Jacobson, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find those on FAIR's website. That's FAIR.org. The website is also the place to sign up for FAIR's Action Alert Network, to subscribe to our newsletter, which is called Extra, and to show support for the organization if you're so inclined. And we thank you for that support. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.